Hey everybody, welcome to Backyard Space Opera Podcast. It's me, Kyle. This week we're going to continue our conversation with Will Orr, who is production sound as well as an animator and video game designer. In this part two, we talk specifically about animation and indie game design and his game Maze Quest and have a great conversation. So without further ado, here is the continuation of Will. So you're kind of an animator at heart then, and that's kind of where Maze Quest came from. Is you want to you is it the video game animation that drives you right now, or where is that at?
How I got into making video games. So like I have two brothers and one sister, and we're all like all the brothers. Like the reason I started drawing in the first place really was my oldest brother. You know, when we were younger, we were left alone a lot. Single mom, and she worked, and so we were kind of like left at home a lot. She was a house cleaner. So when she was, you know, cleaning a house or something like that, like we kind of run around the neighborhood or, you know, and we draw a lot. And so I used to copy my, my older brother's, you know, drawing. So we all used to kind of like compete with each other. And then we'd take my mom's books. Like she had these really long, like those like female love novels that are they're like 3 inches thick, you know, and we'd draw in the margins, you know, and make little flip books. And so we used to just like kind of one up each other, you know, and making little scenes, just little animated scenes. And so that's kind of how I got really interested in animation. And so I never really like left that, but I put it kind of like I didn't really get in like back into it until much later in life. But that was what kind of started my interest in animation. And then, of course, I loved all the Disney movies growing up, you know, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast were kind of some of the ones that were coming out during my childhood. And I mean, Aladdin, especially, that was so impressive. When I saw that lava, I was like, whoa. But I would draw comic books when I was in my around 12, 13. I started doing comic books, you know, just entertaining myself, making my own comic books. And then I didn't get back into animation until I was in the Marines for 4 years out of high school. So that's why I didn't go to college. I joined the Marines. In the Marines, like when I was not in the field training, I got into this program called Moho, which is a 2D animation software that...
Oh, yeah, I know Moho. That's
And it turned into Anime Studio.
Yeah.
That I got really into that, and I was loving it. It was like a free program, I think, back in the day. And then it got bought by Smith Micro Software, and you turned into Anime Studio, which is what it is now. But I really got into animation after the military, like my last year in the military. And then I moved out to LA like right after I got out in 2005. And then I really got into it big time. I just started making stuff making stuff. I made some pretty terrible animations that nobody watched, and they're probably nowhere to be found.
Oh, I want to see you. That'd be cool.
Oh,
I love
man.
That stuff.
It was also terrible. But I mean, I was still making terrible stuff in 2012. That was my last one that I did, but I got out of using that program. I got more into the frame by frame stuff, 'cause that was more of like, you'd build rigs like with bones, you know, like kind of like more like 3D software.
The cutout animation, I call it, right?
Yeah, South Park-y stuff. Mm-hmm. I got out of that style. I kind of liked the I wanted to do traditional animation, and so in 2013 I went to the Animation Guild up here in LA, up in Burbank. They have a little. The Animation Guild offers classes. I took a class called Traditional Animation Basics, TAB, T-A-B for short, with Alex Topete. And he used to work for Disney. I mean, he worked for Disney for like 25 years or something. He's retired now, but now he just teaches the classes at the Guild. But he worked on everything. You look at his IMDb, it's like he worked on everything, like going back to, I think, The Black Cauldron.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he worked on like everything, and he's got fun stories about everybody.
Talk about Disney animation. That's amazing. Black Cauldron, that blew my mind. That was.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, the Rescuers. I think he worked on the dog movie. I don't remember the Aristocrats or Aristocats or something. I mean, he's worked on everything. And so I got really into animation, and I started studying, like, you know, the Nine Old Men. I got you know, the Illusion of Life book. I've got a pretty heavy library of Disney animation and all that stuff. So I got really into animation, and I did a short. I worked on a couple, trying to get my own little series going, and trying to develop like a pitch book that I could like get funded somehow, and that all kind of fell apart. I did a short called 2 Days Till Retirement, which was like about a 2 minute long traditionally animated short. And that's on my YouTube page, but you know, I kind of fizzled out on it because I realized it was such painstaking. It took so long to make just a 2 minute thing, and you know, and I was like, man, I can't spend the time, and I don't know. I just didn't see there was any return on the time investment, you know, as far as, well, nobody's watching it. Nobody's, you know, and so it just looked like a really far gap, to making a living out of it. So I kind of got out of that, and then I started looking at games. This is a very long way around.
It's great. It's fascinating because that's exactly where I think a lot of us are. Is like for me, it's always a balance of time, and you know, I love this thing and I want to do more, but I also want to have something that I can put out to the world. Or like you said, if you're looking to use it as a job tool or to get work, because time is the valuable thing. And how do I maximize the time? Cause I love frame by frame animation too. It's one of my favorite things, but I just don't have the time to do that. So I get my kick by, you know, putting in my little lightning bolts and, you know, this energy blast here and that there, and do it frame by frame. And that fills that need for me. I don't have to do full animations.
Yeah. Yeah. And now I just, from time to time, I do like little, you know, little things just here and there. Just, I've been doing Photoshop animation now. I've learned how to use like the timeline.
Isn't
and
that
stuff.
Great? I love the timeline of Photoshop. It's, I don't know. I just, yeah, it's like nobody really talks about it, but I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. It's like it's weird. I like Photoshop because I love the drawing and painting tools. Mm-hmm. But I worked in this program called Toon Boom for that short that I did. If you ever, heard
Toon Boom Harmony, I played with it. It's a great program.
It's great program, but I don't know, for some reason I've done so many comics, I've worked in Photoshop so much, and I do all the graphics for the games in Photoshop, so I'm so familiar with it that I'm like, you know what, I know they have a timeline feature in this thing, and I you know, there's so many, Photoshop's got so many features that are just kind of like nobody knows about because there's so much, there's so many of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so I just started getting into that. I just, you know, for any long term, like a big project, I wouldn't use Photoshop for. Like if I had to like string out multiple scenes, I wouldn't do it. But for just little things, especially for GIFs, it's perfect.
Yeah, and I'm wow, that's so funny. We're right in the same place because I'm the same way. Where if I have to draw like, you know, an arrow shooting across or this little thing happening, the Photoshop drawing tools are so much better. And the raster kind of tools, whereas I feel like Harmony and Toon Boom are really great if you're strictly vector and you're doing a big project and you need all these crazy what do they call them? Poop. The little ways you hook the layers together through the nodes.
You can actually create like inverse kinetic rigs or whatever, the IK rigs, like with bones and all that stuff. I believe and also the advantage of using Toon Boom for like those long term those big projects is you can reuse assets like really simply. Like you can add like say you do a walk cycle for a character, you can save that as like a symbol, you know, kind of like there was another program, Flash is kind of this very similar features, but you can save a walk cycle and then just drag that symbol, which has all the nested animation inside that symbol. You can just drag it onto your timeline and scale it up too, because it's all vector. You know, that's also a huge advantage. Is like you can scale things up and down with zero loss of quality because it's all vector based instead of raster. That's probably super technical. I hope your listeners aren't just like if their ears aren't bleeding right now from all this technical talk.
And I think it's important though, because you know, just to clarify, if anybody doesn't know, you know, raster is using the pixels and in actually drawing the pixels and changing the color of the pixels to make the image, and a vector uses dots and coordinates, and the pixels aren't saved, the color of the pixels aren't saved, it's where these dots are and the lines are connected. So you could blow it up or shrink it down, it will always have that same integrity and it looks really good, but it has this special kind of feel, like, yep, that's vector art, as opposed to raster art has so much more kind of texture and layers to it.
Yeah.
And like, I love raster art. Like, I love digital painting. All of my wife gives me crap all the time. Anything I make, she's like, it's so aggressive and dark and moody. I'm like, well, that's how I like to paint. Leave me alone.
Yeah. No, I agree. I do like, there's this other program. Have you heard of a TV Paint?
I have not heard of TV Paint.
TV Paint is something that they started using in my tab class. Alex Tapete, he likes the raster look too. Actually, TV Paint's a good middle ground between Toon Boom and Photoshop, because you have raster painting tools, but then you have a lot of the advantages of like Toon Boom as far as for project workflow and reusing assets and stuff like that. I can't really tell you too much more about it other than a lot of studios are now using TV Paint instead of Toon Boom because they like the look better. But yeah, I learned Toon Boom, and you know, like once your brain fills up with so many like hotkeys and stuff like that, like it's just, I was like, all right, I don't want to rewire it again, you know?
Yeah. Like, I just, cause I'll do ZBrush for digital 3D modeling.
Oh yeah.
And there's so many hot, and I have to keep it like, okay, wait a minute, I'm in ZBrush now. Let me turn on that part of my brain.
Oh my God. Yeah. And that's the problem about like, and that's why I got out of the jack of all trades mindset, because, you know, I find myself, you know, having to edit videos and work in Photoshop and now, you know, like with the app development and the games, you know, work in Xcode, work in you know, Unity now, which like, but like, oh, in Cocos 2D and there's just so, it's like just me trying aggressively not to be a jack of all trades is like, I still need to know like 5 or 6 programs and the hotkeys, and then, you know, so it's like I've
but and I think for a lot of people, it's, at least for me, I don't speak for everybody, but I get challenged by it, and I sometimes find it frustrating, but for me that's kind of the joy of it too, is I like trying to get to that, you know, I'm not great at all these things, but if I can get proficiency and be able to make a product, like you've made a video game and it looks amazing, and just to be able to make a complete package on your own and put it out there, I that really appeals to me. Is that kind of where you're coming from, or?
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you what, the video games, and I have help with my brother, my older brother, Chris, he's the programmer, and I'll tell you what, like, so we've made 2 games, and he's kind of been, I would say, 65%, 65-70%, you know, especially with Maze Quest. Maze Quest was more like 80% him. Like I'm kind of the one who's just like handling the back end of you know, iTunes Connect and marketing and filling out metadata and doing the occasional graphical stuff. But as far as coding goes, I don't know how to code, and that's one of the things I've started to kind of learn certain, you know, I'm like, I can read it and kind of understand what's going on, but yeah, that was one thing that I needed a lot of help from him to make these games. And he, that's sort of his genius is programming.
And coding is that other big world. I don't know it too well either. And I think your game, the Maze Quest game, it looks massive. It looks like a game it's an RPG.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got so much going on. Whereas I've kind of dabbled with the idea of maybe, we could do a game one day but it's more that kind of picture quest game where you're given the painting and you got to, pick your objects.
Yeah. I mean, and Maze Quest started, so we did one game called Space Scavenger, and that game we released in early 2015. We started working on it in September of 2014, right after I actually released that animated short that I was working on for way too long. But then after I released that, I started looking at what I loved about video games, and especially in this day and age, is everybody's playing games on their phone, and it's a huge market, and it kind of tied into my love of animation and technology, and it was just like I was like, you know what, that would be fun. And it also allowed me to reach a really, really wide audience. And that's the really tough thing about doing what we do is, we do what we do, but we also want people to enjoy it. There's a lot of noise out there. It's really hard to be seen in all the noise, And I just saw that as a way that it was a hot market. And so I was like, you know what, let's I reached out to my brother Chris, who's been programming his entire life, and I was like, let's try to make a game. And he's like, okay, cool. And so we started on making Space Scavenger, and then we got that out, and we did kind of several iterations of that. We updated it a few times, just trying to get downloads up. And then we kind of redid the whole thing, like reskinned the game, kind of we started using a different engine. Game engine. We started out using SpriteKit, which is Apple's proprietary sort of game engine and asset library. We rebuilt it with Cocos 2D engine and library, and that is probably just not important to your listeners. But
I've actually looked at the Cocos 2D. I haven't used it at all, but I was, because I had that, sometimes I get an itch like, I wonder if video games, and I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Cocos 2D is great. The draw to Cocos 2D is for people that want to be cross-platform, like if you want to release on Android and iPhone, it allows you to basically program in the C++ language. It's like a mid-level language, and it's kind of universal. And then it'll generate two different builds for you, one for iPhone and one for Android, and you don't have to manually recode your game. So that's the advantage versus like when we were doing everything using SpriteKit at the time, Objective-C was the code, the language that we had to use. And Objective-C is like Apple's proprietary language. And now it's Swift, which is now what you code. If you're working in Apple, and you want it to be just natively compatible with Apple devices, no problems whatsoever, and use all the functionality of the iOS, you program in Swift. So Cocos 2D is a great library to use, an engine, if you want to be cross-platform. However, we've moved on to Unity, using the Unity engine, which is, it's got a lot of support for using 3D assets, and it's also just kind of, it's easier to develop with because you can, according to my brother, he likes it better because you can sort of real time get, you don't have to compile a build. It doesn't take a long time to compile a build to see a change that you've made. It kind of auto compiles it almost like Adobe Premiere or whatever it does. You don't have to transcode or render every time you make an edit. And also, I mean, if you were trying to develop with Cocos 2D, you'd probably need to know C++. I mean, I've tried, I've gotten, looked at a couple of books at Barnes & Noble, some really thick books on C++, and I'm like, oh my God, my brother got into that early, and so that's the only reason he's good at it. But
talk about specialists. I mean, that's where I would
draw the line. Is like I'm not going to learn C++. I know enough of it to know that I don't want to learn it.
Yeah. It'll take you so long to get to the point to where my brother is, where it's really worth just hiring somebody out. And really, like, so basically my role with the games and stuff is like, I just kind of call myself a developer and a producer and beta tester zero, you know, basically. Like I play all these games so much, and I find the bugs and I find the things that don't make sense. And I mean, Maze Quest, you say Maze Quest was a big game. It was a way bigger game before I told Chris, I'm like, dude, you don't need this many skills. You don't need this. Like, he had like hundreds of skills, and
is he a D&D guy?
Not D&D, but he plays like old school video games, like Might and Magic.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And he's got a YouTube channel where he does nothing but play like retro, PC games. And I mean, he's got a nice little following of, 5,000 or 6,000 people on his YouTube channel that just love watching him play these old games.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so that's kind of like when we finished Space Scavenger, he'd started working on this kind of in his spare time, this little game called Maze Quest. And when he told me about it, and I was like, well, that sounds like fun. Like, you know, let's do that next. So he really just started working on it, sending me builds. And, you know, I started playing them and just giving feedback. And just that was over a year ago now. I mean, it took about, I would say, 10 months to build that game. You know, and that's kind of with him working full time on it and me, you know, working as much as I could on helping him make the game. And just
it really doesn't sound that long. I mean, knowing what goes into these things, it good job getting it done that quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like forever too. I mean, honestly, though, we had it done, and then we spent about 2 months kind of fussing over the music. I wanted to get music produced for the game. Like, basically I wanted to get a music supervisor and have it done kind of professionally, where I had a contract drawn up, you know, and I got all that paperwork. I just wanted to go through that process to kind of get myself acquainted with the idea of having specialists to do certain things, you know, because I didn't want to, like, I wanted to score the game, you know, the right way.
Yeah, because you know how important the music is, because, you know, being sound, I mean, that's...
Because you're going to be listening to it a lot, you know, hopefully. So we did spend a couple months after the fact to, like, just basically, you know, in that time, we did fix a lot of little things, but for the most part, it was done in, 10 months or so, and then we spent a few more months just fussing with it. So yeah, and it's been out since July.
And were you the artist? Did you draw all the characters and do all the animations?
No, that was my brother. He did all that.
Oh, wow,
I did all the art for the second version of the Space Scavenger that's in the store right now. I did all those graphics, and Chris did everything. Wow. You know? Yeah. He really did it.
Good job, Chris. I mean, it looks great.
Yeah. We're going to be, I've already started working on a sequel. And that's going to be, basically, I'm doing the graphics for the sequel, and it's going to be the same kind of structure of the game is going to be an RPG game with, you know, kind of the same structure to it. It's just going to be set in the Old West.
Oh, neat. I like that. That's fun.
Yeah. So
I love the, before steampunk was really a thing, I used to love games that were set in the Old West, but had fantasy elements and
There will be there's gonna be magical sort of elements to it. You're gonna have like characters that are magical, and there's gonna be undead cowboys. I mean, it's gonna be.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it.
Well, you know, I don't want to take up more of your time, because it's so great that you'll be able to talk this long, and I super appreciate it.
I got plenty of time. Don't worry. I listen to podcasts that are like 3 hours long most of the time.
We dabble in that. We're like, because we started out doing shows for like an hour, and we're like, well, do people really want to listen to this for an hour? Let's try to turn it more to, and it's gone up and down over the time.
Well, they probably tuned out already anyway, so it doesn't matter.
This is great stuff, because it's really great that you're able to give us such specific kind of technical pointers, because a lot of people I talk to shy away from that for whatever reason. They don't want to give the really specifics. So I super appreciate it, because it's like, it's one thing to say, oh, you know, we really want to inspire you. There's that piece. But then there's also the technical knowledge of, but yeah, what do I do in this tiny little thing, in this roadblock? How do I overcome it? And I think you've answered a lot of questions for me, at least. I'm sure other people out there feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been stumbling my way through this, like, you know, like a lot of your listeners probably. I mean, just, and, you know, along the way, I mean, the reason why I can be super technical is because that's kind of the way my mind works. And I wouldn't even dream of withholding anything from anybody, because, you know, that's just half the battle anyway. You know, I mean, you got to get up every day, and it doesn't really matter how much technical knowledge you have. You still have to sit in front of a computer or stand or whatever you do, you still have to do the work, you know, and that's the hardest part, really, just doing the work, like staying motivated, believing that what you're doing means something and is worth finishing, you know?
Absolutely. And I think for what I try to emphasize too, is that feeling of, I'm not going anywhere because this thing didn't turn out because of a technical reason. I didn't have a certain skill, or this thing didn't come out the way I had it in my head. That practice of doing the work and getting through the feeling of this, it's too hard, and you just keep pushing forward, that is moving forward, even if the thing you're working on doesn't actually pan out for some technical reason.
Yeah.
Building that tolerance is really important.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really the reason why at this point, you know, I've got so many projects that I've done, and honestly, most of them I didn't finish. Just in the last year, I've really been pulling out a lot of old projects, and like, you know, like I started this comic book series I released the first issue in 2012. It's called Grid Down, and it was just this, you know, long story arc that I wrote, you know, about an EMP blast that takes out the power grid in the United States. And I started it, and I wrote a lot on it, but I didn't release that second issue until just this year. I pulled it out, and I'm like, you know what, this is old, it's dated, it's not my best writing, it's not my best work, but I just decided, you know what, like, I'm gonna finish this comic, and I don't really care how good it is, because it's really just the process of just doing it and finishing something and being at the end of the day, like, I hated it. I hated looking at it. I was like, this is terrible. And honestly, so I've released it. I mean, it's been out for a couple months. I released it shortly after Maze Quest, but like, now I look back on it and I'm like, it doesn't matter like how bad it was. Like, I'm like, it looks better and better the farther out I get from it, you know. I don't know if that's ever the case with you.
It's always the case. And I mean, that's fantastic. You're able to do that. And I love pulling out old projects that were half finished and trying to move forward on them, because you need that space to really see what you have. And I know for me, if I make something and I work on it for a while, I've lost all perspective. I have no idea if it's good or bad or in between. And
yeah.
I either have to have somebody else come in and tell me, or I have to leave it alone for a good long time and come back to it.
Yeah. Well, there's a Stephen King's book on writing. I don't know. Have you read that book?
I haven't, but people have told me, many different people have told me how great it is. I need to read it.
It is great. And honestly, like I have the podcast or the audiobook version. It's beautiful. Actually, that's a great book because he reads it, and he's it's kind of like I always like it when the authors read their own stuff. He's not the audio quality is terrible, but for some reason him reading it, and it's just it makes it even better. But so what he does is when he finishes a manuscript, he puts it. Like, he puts it away immediately. Well, first of all, he tries to finish it as soon as possible. Like, just get it out, get the first draft done as soon as possible. And then he puts it away for a month at least and doesn't look at it for a month. And I thought, I'd probably need longer than that because my stuff is so terrible. I'd need to get like a real break from it. But that right there, I'm like, that sounds about right now in my estimation, because you do need to get yourself out of the middle of it, because you're in the weeds. You can't see the forests, and you just do need that perspective, you know. And I now do that with any new writing that I do. I put it away and then I come back to it later, and it's still terrible, but that's just because I'm not that good yet.
Well, so final thing to wrap up, what is your long-term goals? Do you want to continue doing sound as your main thing for a long, long time, or do you have any aspirations?
Yeah, I mean, I probably will be doing sound for years to come. As long as I'm here in Los Angeles, I'll probably be doing sound. But yeah, my goal now is just to keep kind of hacking away at these games, put more out there, and eventually just kind of build a nice little portfolio of passive income streams, you know, through the just selling apps in the store. And we're going to branch out. We're going to be on Android soon with Maze Quest. We're going to be on the Steam store. We're going to have PC and desktop versions of Maze Quest, and everything we do going forward is going to be, you know, on all those different platforms. And you know, meanwhile, I'm going to continue to put out the comic books, and you know, that's just, eventually something's going to present itself to us in that, you know, through this process, you know, like, I will stop doing sound eventually. If I'm making a living doing other things, I do enjoy sound, but the only thing I don't enjoy about it is I really have to be here in Los Angeles all the time to do sound. And I do kind of want to be able to live other places if I wanted to.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So, but
what? Well, you know, the Maze Quest looks awesome. I don't play phone games really at all, but I am going to make a point to play this game because I do think it looks cool.
Yeah, I'll send you a promo code, and I appreciate you having me on the podcast, and I really appreciate your podcast in general. You know, it's a very lonely place out there as a creative, and you know, we do need to stick together.
and I love talking to people like, you know, you and other people who we're all doing the similar things, and everybody's so nice, and everybody's so caring and compassionate and wanting to help each other. And I've yet to meet anybody who's not that way, who's in this space. And I super appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you, Kyle.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Will.
All right, man. Yeah. Have a great day.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us again. I know you enjoyed that conversation with Will Orr. Thank you so much, Will, for being on the show. And everybody, check out his game. It's on the Apple Store. It's on iTunes, Maze Quest, and all of his other great stuff. And if you would like to contact us, you can email info@backyardspaceopera.com. You can also find us on Facebook. And come back next time, and we'll see you then.